Hello, everybody. Welcome to F1 Explains. My name is Christian Hugill. This is the official Formula One podcast that exists to answer your questions about the sport. This is how it works. You email f1explains@f1.com and we find the best people to answer those questions. And if there's one thing every Formula One fan is interested in, it's speed. Admit it. No matter what you love about Formula One, whether it's the cars, the tracks, the people, the personalities, or any of the number of things to love about this wonderful sport, speed captivates us all in some way, shape, or form. And we always say, get in touch, send us your questions, f1explains@f1.com. And if it's a particularly good question, if it's a gold standard F1 Explains question, we spend an episode digging into it. Rebecca is in Sydney. Hello, Rebecca. It's exactly what she did. She emailed us and asked, what differentiates a high-speed corner from a low-speed corner? But it got us thinking. It got our thinking caps on at F1 Explains. And we thought, I think we can dig into this a little bit further. We can dig into the differences in the cars when you're on high-speed tracks versus low-speed tracks, as well as those high-speed corners versus low-speed corners. And there's very few better weekends in the calendar to explain it this weekend, because Monza is one of the highest speed tracks on the calendar. It is the Italian Grand Prix this weekend, but particularly in Sector 1, after the rundown into the first corner, that is a very tight, twisty, low speed section. It is absolutely perfect. And speaking of perfection, there can be nobody better to explain what it feels like to drive these wonderful cars than the former Renault driver and F1 TV pundit Jolyon Palmer. He is absolutely fantastic at digging into what it's like in driving these machines. So I caught up with him a couple of weeks ago to put Rebecca's questions to him. Jolyon Palmer, welcome back to F1 Explains. A joy to have you.
Hello again. Joy to be here.
I think it's your first of the season, you know?
It is. Who's counting? But yes, it is. Good to be back.
I keep a strict eye on the presenter rotor to make sure that it's balanced and fair across all quarters. Otherwise, Alex Jakes gets cross.
Has he been on already?
He's been on, yeah.
Okay.
We've had Barreto.
1-0.
We've had Jakes.
Am I the last one on?
So you're the last of the regular
trio. It's starting to sound worse, yeah.
Well, you're always busy with F1 Nation. That's what it must be.
That's very true.
That's what it must be. As we've just been talking about at the top of the show, this episode is devoted to Rebecca in Sydney, because she asked, what differentiates a high-speed corner from a low-speed corner? So we thought we'd go one further and explain the differences between high-speed tracks and low-speed tracks. We're going to delve deep into the world of high-speed versus low-speed, starting by talking about the characteristics of high-speed and low-speed tracks. It sounds an obvious question, Jolyon Palmer, but it's not just simply there's a long straight. What makes a track high speed? What makes a track low speed? Give us examples of the two differing tracks that we come across in the F1 calendar.
There's a couple of differences here. So you've got high speed tracks. So somewhere like Silverstone is a high speed track. You've got loads and loads of fast corners. You haven't got many slow speed corners. Somewhere like Barcelona, again, you've got loads of fast corners. So I guess your average speed around the lap is pretty high. You've also got somewhere like Monza, which is really high speed on the straights, but full of low speed corners.
This is exactly what I'm getting at. It's not just as simple as, oh, that's got a big long straight, so that's high speed.
Yeah, so sort of defining what is high speed and what is low speed. From a driver's point of view, I'd always be interested in what the cornering speeds, really. But then you have your Monzas, your Spas, which is, I guess, sort of high speed on both angles, but you also really high speed on the straights. So you're trimming out downforce as well on the way around. Low speed's pretty obvious. It's Monaco for your purest example. Mm-hmm. Street circuits generally tend to be pretty low speed. Somewhere like Budapest, slow fiddly corners, and then you get the sort of the strange one on that end, which is again Baku, really high speed on the straights, really low speed through all the corners.
Straight.
Yeah, is that a high speed? Yeah, it's a high speed track, but with really low speed corners.
Yes, absolutely, and can we say the same on corners, or is that more simple?
There's a big difference. High speed corner, you're not really thinking about attacking too much on the brakes. You're going to obviously carry a huge amount of speed through the apex. It's the most exhilarating part of driving a Formula One car, probably. Your peak G force, keeping it together, keeping it nice and smooth. Low speed corner, if you're attacking with a, if you're in Monza or Baku, you've got a high entry speed. It's all about your braking marker, getting the car stopped, getting that deceleration phase. If you're in a Monaco, Budapest, where it's lots of low speed, somewhere like Montreal maybe as well, you're looking at, entry, exits, potentially quite crucial. Compliance, mechanical grip, very different to having like a smooth aero platform and a very different way to attack the corners.
I've said this on this podcast before, that my only experience of driving F1 cars is on the PlayStation. On the PlayStation, Jolyon. Are you a gamer?
Very fast. I used to play back in the day. I'm a little bit out of that world.
Out of practice. You say I'm very fast. I am good at carrying the most amount of speed I can around high speed corners without running wide, going off the racing line, going into the gravel. I'm good at that.
That's a good skill.
I'm bad at getting the most out of the low speed corners. I go to
On the PlayStation. See, I was the other way around. It used to really annoy me. But I played PlayStation before it became really cool to get all the sim rigs and everything.
Yes.
So I was on the handheld controller. And if you're doing Cops Corner with a handheld controller, you've got to turn that like joystick to the right. The amount of times you just miss your turn in and then you just wave goodbye to an apex and it's gone. It's a little bit like that in real life, though, because everything happens on a obviously a much faster time frame. If you miss a turn and you have a slide, you don't have time to somehow scoop it up.
Well, this is what I was going to ask, because again, I will never drive a Formula One car, regretfully, but
keep dreaming, Christian.
We keep going. But that, it's always funny. I've always been the same on these games. I can do the high speed stuff really well, but if you race me on a Hungaro ring where it's tighter, twistier, I'm not as good. Is that the same when you're driving not just Formula One cars, in other categories? Can you be better at one type of corner than another?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. I used to really like high speed. You know, you obviously need to have a great feel for grip. You need to be able to be quite smooth on the wheel, not provoke the car to do something snappy. But essentially the high speed, you also just need to be brave at times. When a corner is on the edge of flat out and you're sort of grip limited, but also if you actually go over the top of this, you're going to smash the car into pieces.
Yes.
It takes a level of just commitment. And you get some drivers that are a little bit more committed than others and will just... You're trying to find the last couple of hundredths by hanging it out there, and other drivers will be erring on the side of caution. There's skill in there, but it's where the driver's confidence makes the biggest difference. The low speed is massively technique driven. So your Budapest example, finding a rhythm, finding the flow through sequences of corners, is way less about sheer skill and commitment and more about maybe your curb usage, the way that you blend off the brakes and release carry speed into a corner, the way that you can pick up the throttle rather than just grit your teeth and go for it, which is probably what I was better at doing.
Well, it's funny because, again, we mentioned the last time you were on this podcast that I used to race karts as a kid. I've just thought that my PlayStation sort of reflects my karting. I actually had bravery. I was all right, bravery. I have very little technical ability. So I could do the bit of like, put your foot down, be committed, couldn't do the bit of the actual technical ability.
So if you do get a go in a Formula One car, I'm sure you will at some point in the long and
longest
illustrious
career
that's going to come. Just make sure that they put you at Silverstone and you can hammer it through Cops, Maggots and Beckers and you'll be great.
And those are sort of characteristics. What are the challenges of a high speed track compared to a low speed track?
So apart from just the driving difference. So the driving, you need to be smooth. You need to be committed on a high speed track. But there's also massive differences in the way that you would have the setup for high speed versus low speed. You can have an imbalance. So a lot of the time on low speed, you want to have a bit more front end. You want to make sure that you're not understeering and just wasting time at the apex. But then you don't want to have too pointy a car in the high speed. Otherwise, it's just frightening. You're gonna bin it with oversteer. So trying to find a balance is always a perennial issue. And then there's the bigger picture here is the different compromises that you make. So in the high speed, it's about aerodynamic load. It's about downforce, pure and simple. If you've got downforce on the car, you can attack. The car will stay glued to the road. Brilliant. In the low speed, it's a little bit more about mechanical grip. So the downforce comes off the car as the speed reduces. You're not glued to the road anymore. So you need to make sure you're getting good grip from the chassis, from the suspension settings, making sure you've got your tires having good contact with the tarmac or the curbs. You need good compliance. You need probably a softer car, so it's going to roll around a little bit more and find grip in different places. Whereas in the high speed, again, it's just downforce. So you stiffen up the car. You want to make sure your aero load is as good as possible. So you have the car really rigid, so it's clean and crisp.
Again, I'm going back to the game because as someone that explains Formula One for a living, it's amazing how the game breaks down F1 into sort of manageable chunks. Of
yeah, it's a good advert for F1 the game here.
We did that.
Depth of knowledge.
2 seasons ago, we did that. So you're welcome, EA Sports. But you do see when you are to track like Monza, that you are setting your car up with low downforce. The grip levels required aren't quite as much. Whereas then when you are to track like the Hungaroring, you're doing high downforce setup. These are terms we hear bandied about on Formula One coverage when you're watching on the telly all the time. But it's something that we don't always think about in terms of setup, that these are the things that in the garage you were thinking about all the time with these different tracks and these different ways of setting the car up.
All the time. It's downforce levels. So Spa is the best example of this because you've got really long straights, sector 1 and 3. Through a rouge, you're flat out, you blast up the hill. So you want low downforce at that point because you want the car to cut through the air without having a huge amount of drag, without slowing down with air resistance, pure and simple. Same when you come back at the end of the lap, you're flat out into the bus stop. You want to be as quick as you can in the straight. So you take off the downforce, but then you haven't got the downforce for the middle sector.
Where you need the car to stick to the circuit.
Exactly. You've got a few fast corners in there. You've got Puan, you've got the chicane. So there you want the downforce. So the Spa is the classic track, which has always been a trade-off of high and low downforce, inevitably somewhere you find the middle ground. Your two examples there, Monza. So really high-speed track with low-speed corners. But because the straight line speeds are so high, you're going to trim out the car. You're going to have to then float into the corners when you get there.
What do you mean by trim out the car?
Low downforce.
Sure.
Take off the wing angle. Sometimes to really extreme levels, probably have a Monza spec wing, and you're just gonna cut through the air much better with that. But when you hit the brakes for the corner, you're gonna feel like you're floating in there because you don't have the car like sucking into the ground. So you have to brake earlier. You feel like you're sort of controlling slides the whole way through the corners. It's not a great feeling, but the gain is net. Because the straights are more dominant in Monza.
Correct me if I'm wrong, I'm guessing Baku must be similar because you've got the long straight, which is so fast and so long, but sector 2, round by where we see the castle on the TV pictures, is really tight.
It's exactly the same. Yeah, long straights, the more you're flat out in a Formula One car, the more you want to trim the downforce. I'll provide one thing to mention here. This year we have active aero. So these are things that would have happened for years and years and years, ever since aerodynamics came in. With active aero, you've kind of got the best of both worlds now. You hit the straight mode and you press your active aero and you have DRS open effectively, but it's active aero now. So you've got the low downforce on the straights, your front wing, your rear wing both open, but then they shut when you hit the corners. So having that downforce trade-off isn't quite as big as it used to be forever because you kind of now with F1 are getting it all the time. Low downforce on the straights, high downforce in the corners, which is perfect.
You've got many skills in your locker. Being psychic is one of them because you'd answered a lot of Kathy from California's question. Kathy's emailed f1explains@f1.com. She wanted to know about car setups and she said, how do they vary between high and low speed tracks? You've done a big chunk of that there. Anything else to mention on key setup differences between the two styles of tracks?
I mean, I think that's the bulk of it. You have your outlier circuits. So somewhere like Monaco, even now, you maybe provide a Monaco-specific wing to get maximum downforce. To hell with straight line speed around Monaco. You're going to do everything you can. You're going to have the spring soften, the dampers soften. You're going to really make sure the whole suspension is going to be soft so that you can ride curbs nicely. And then again, somewhere like a Suzuka, your fast tracks, you stiffen it up, you run the downforce that's required.
Any changes on things like brakes or tire pressures? I'm thinking for braking into corners when you might, for example, be braking into corners more frequently because there are more tight and twisty corners.
Not really. Tire pressures, you're going to run at the Pirelli mandated minimum everywhere.
Fine.
So tire pressures are basically governed by Pirelli now. The lower you have them, the more you have the tire in contact with the track. They sort of squish, if you like, if you can imagine blowing up a balloon. The more they touch the track, the more grip you get. But then there's structural integrity that Pirelli are usually worried about. Mm-hmm. And so they don't want to run them too low. Everyone is basically running Pirelli minimum tire pressures at all times. What's the other one? The brakes. The brakes, you have certain circuits that are really hard on the brakes. It's not really necessarily about high speed or low speed. Obviously, when you've got a load of high speed corners, so your Barcelona examples with maybe Silverstone, probably Melbourne, you could throw in the same category now. You're not using the brakes so much.
No.
So brake cooling's really easy. Sometimes warming up the brakes even can be trickier on certain circuits, but those have all been pretty toasty recently. So no, brakes are generally okay.
Kathy, pause. We'll come back to you because I want to go to Dave in Canada, who is fascinated by something you've just mentioned in your previous answer, Jolien, active aero. Let's just pop back to that a second because we should mention it. It's a big feature of the new Formula One cars in 2026. Just, you touched upon this, Jolien, but to go into a bit more detail, explain what active aero is and how its use varies between high and low speed areas of a track.
So active aero what it does is it opens up the rear wing. In the rear, it's more or less like DRS. The difference is it's not mandated to be the center gap opening, which was always the slot opening like we've seen for the last, I've lost track of how many years we've had DRS, 15 years or something.
Oh, it was around then, wasn't it? Yeah.
So
I can tell you Jenson Button was the first to use it. That's about all I can tell you.
Yeah, well, brilliant information. Thank you.
You're listening to F1 Explains.
That's what we wanted to know. Who was the last to use it?
Oh, no, I do know this.
It's Kimmy, isn't it? I think it was Kimmy.
Producer Jamie says Kimmy Antonelli.
I think it was Kimmy.
Right.
Okay, a generational shift for DRS.
There you go. We'll double check that by the time we get to the end of the episode, but we're saying Kimmy Antonelli. Carry on.
And no one will fact check you. You get away with it.
Exactly.
But so the difference with active aero on the rear is the principle's the same. You're going to reduce your downforce by opening up the rear flap. But obviously, we've seen the Macarena style wing. You now have freedom how you're going to do that, rather than the mandated DRS slot gap opening, and that's the same for all cars. The difference with active aero is it's doing the rear and the front at the same time. So the front wing flap also drops down, and so you're getting reduced drag, you're getting reduced downforce. You do that when you have straight mode, so where the FIA decide that it's safe to basically do that, the drivers hit a button, much like DRS, and it will reduce the drag on the rear and the front, and then it pops up for the corners. If you try and attack a corner with your active aero in place, so your straight mode zone, it doesn't pop back in for the corner. You're going to be straight off into the hedge.
And one final thing before I come back to Kathy, promise you, Kathy, I've not forgotten you, because there's also another question here that we've sort of covered, but I just want to double check we don't need to say anything else. And this is Barra from South Africa. You're doing a very good job of answering the question coming up, which is brilliant.
What an annoying trait that is.
No, it's a good trait. It's a good trait. It also shows us that our listeners are asking
more
the right questions. Brilliant.
Keep going.
Yeah, keep going. Barra in South Africa has asked about braking. They want to know how it compares on tight and twisty circuits like Monaco, as opposed to the ones that have fast straights like Monza, as we've been mentioning so much. Does the way you brake differ? Are you, for example, pressing the pedal more deeply? Is the travel different between the brake pedal? I mean, obviously you're braking more frequently. You touched upon it a little while ago, but anything else to note on the brakes in these different circuits?
It's different all the time. So I mentioned Monza, you've got low downforce. So the brakes, the feel of the brakes should be more or less the same. It's a really hard press. It's a stamp with your left foot. You're gonna attack that with pretty much for most humans, that's gonna be all your leg muscle when you hit the brakes. So you're gonna slam it, and your foot's gonna naturally blend off as the speed comes off, the downforce comes off. You need to release the brakes. That's your big stops on the brakes. Monza, you've got to be a little bit more careful because you don't have the downforce on the car, but let's take an Austria, for example. You've got a few big stops there. You've got some downforce on the car because you need it for the high-speed corners. Maximum attack and then blend out. Somewhere like Monaco, you've got, in theory, loads of downforce on the car because you're running it because the corners are so tight and twisty. The reality, though, is that it's quite bumpy. So you can't attack with all your force when you hit the brakes for Saint-Devot. You're going to lock up and you're going to be going into the chapel area. So you have to just be a little bit more gentle with the brakes there. And the same is true when you have corner after corner after corner. So somewhere like Budapest, where you're struggling to find a rhythm in the middle sector, you've got turn five into the chicanes. It's a blend of the brakes rather than a big brake attack. So if you've got speed on the car, maximum stamp. The lower speed into the corner, the more you have to caress the brakes.
Would a maximum stamp, as you put it, which is a great term, just generally speaking, maximum stamp, would that potentially lock the brakes, which is where the car almost stops too much and the surface of the tyre skids along the road? We see the tyre marks on the track, we see the smoke. Can that happen if you stamp on the brakes too much, or does that happen in a different way?
If you done a lot of leg day, you might be able to do it.
Great.
But again, for most of the time, it's pretty much maximum stamp. The couple of times you'll see a lockup early on in the brakes, it's if someone's got on the curb or if it's bumpy, you might see a lock on the initial brake. Or if the tyres aren't in the right window, they're not gripping as much, you go for maximum stamp and you're not getting the deceleration. If the tyres are working, they're in the right window, you're on a nice smooth asphalt, you stamp on the brakes from high speed in that first second of brake hit with the downforce on the car and the brakes, tyres in the right temperature, it should be almost impossible to have a big lockup. The lockups that you see are generally in the later part of the braking when you're now releasing the brakes, the downforce is coming off, it's more likely to lock up. Or maybe you're turning into the corner as well.
Excellently explained. I'm going to do a really cheesy presenter bit now, which I think you'll really like. So we've been talking about brakes. Let's put the brakes on this episode and go for a commercial break back in a moment. Did you like that?
10 out of 10.
Thank you. Yeah, good. Welcome back to F1 Explains. We're with Jolyon Palmer this week, explaining the difference between high-speed and low-speed tracks. We're recording this episode in the commentary box at Silverstone, where I'm quite conscious that in a moment, Formula 2 qualifying will start. So, spoiler alert, this episode's about to get a bit louder. Sorry about that. But you're listening to a Formula 1 podcast, so frankly, I don't think there's any means to complain. You might hear engine noises.
I think it enhances it, if anything.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of enhancing our product, Kathy from California has done that this week by asking some brilliant questions to F1 Explains at F1.com. I've been promising to come back to the second part of her email. Kathy, I'm coming back to you now. I'm a man who keeps his promises. Kathy says, can someone please explain the apex to me? How do drivers use the apex? And what are the benefits of using the apex? And this is something we hear at both high-speed and low-speed tracks, don't we, Jolyon?
It's racing lines. It's the quickest way around any single corner is to start on the outside, take your apex, which is your center point in the corner. You've mostly got a curb that's delineating the. You're laughing at me as if
it's
that's
a lovely
not a
word.
Big word.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Producer
wasn't it?
Jamie says it's a big word.
Yeah, it came out before I thought about it, but we'll go with it.
But here we are.
And then, so that's your apex point, and then you're going back to the outside of the track for your exit. It's pure and simple, the fastest way to get around any single corner, unless you're talking about bank corners or sure, sort of curveballs. But a flat corner, in terms of topography, another big word for you, then that's it. Apex, smoothest way through a corner.
I'm really impressed by the big words. It's great. I don't have many big words. I struggle with small ones, so it's good. Let's carry on some listener questions. No name on this one. How do the G-force levels that drivers experience on the neck differ between high and low speed tracks?
It's a cornering speed rather than anything to do with straight line speed. So high cornering speed circuits. So let's say, again, Barcelona now, you got wickedly fast corners at the end of the lap. You then go into turn three or the first sector's quick. The G-forces are ridiculous, to be honest, in a Formula One car. I think it's about 6G you can pull in the high speed. So that's why, actually, we saw Kimi Antonelli in the late part of the race having to sort of rest his neck. He's hanging on. Because it's absolutely brutal, the force that's going through the driver's neck. And for Barcelona especially, you got a right-hander, you got a right-hander, you got another right-hander, a quick left, and then you're into the longest of right-handers.
We love
before,
a right-hander.
Guess what? A right-hander. They love them. So you're the left side, I mean, you just cannot hang on to it by the end of the race. So it's tricky. The low speed tracks, the G force is way reduced. All of the energy, the same way as you're not maximum smash of the pedals. you're not putting the G through the car, so it's a bit easier.
And on that, something I get asked a lot, you know, is what does G-force mean? And G-force, I think the best way of describing it that sort of makes sense in my very non-scientific brain is when your 1G is your normal body weight, 2G is twice your body weight, being sort of the stress of that being pulled through your body. And Formula One drivers can get up to 5-6G in high-speed corners.
Is it like six times the force of gravity?
Yes, exactly.
So that's how much you'd be sort of being, if you're standing up, you're being squashed into the ground, but this is a lateral G, so...
And another way of, I think, explaining it really well to, again, those of us who'll never drive these cars, and in fact, when I've just Googled this, it literally uses Formula One cars as an example. So braking in a car, you feel a bit of force in your body if you're driving to the supermarket and you're going to brake. That is 0.5 to 1 G, a forward slash deceleration G-force. A roller coaster, we go for a nice day at a theme park, up to 3 G or 4 G on a really extreme roller coaster. Formula One cars, 5 to 6G. Fighter jets, up to 9G.
Yeah, that's hardcore, isn't it?
They're hardcore. Even they beat you lot.
Fair dues.
Yeah, fair enough. Moving on from G-forces to tyres. Now, obviously, all drivers will have to use two of Formula One's three tyre compounds during a race. Soft or medium, medium or hard, a mix of the three. But... in high-speed or low-speed tracks, the tyres can differ because there are different versions of the different tyre compounds, aren't there, Jolien? Just explain that for us.
High-speed tracks, you've got loads of energy going through. So we're sitting here at Silverstone, we're with the C1, C2, C3 tyre, the same that we used in Barcelona by no coincidence. You're putting so much energy through the tyres by nailing them through fast corners. That's the hardest work tyres have to do.
Because Pirelli have five compounds of tyres, C1 to C5, C5 being the softest.
Yeah, so the perfect, very well explained.
Thank you.
You're good at this.
Been a few years on this now.
So the perfect comparison here is Silverstone and Barcelona, I've mentioned already, loads and loads of fast corners, tough for the G-force, all of that stuff, nearly fighter pilot things. but really difficult for Pirelli tyres as well. So you're gonna wear through them. If you have too soft a tyre, it can actually start falling over a little bit at the really soft end when you're putting this amount of stress through them. So you have to go for a hard tyre. Monaco, you always go for a soft tyre because you're not putting nearly so much energy with the lower speed corners. So you need a tyre that's going to fire up quickly and give you just a little bit more grip.
So yes, the C1 to 5, you will find at tracks like this, Silverstone, where it's higher speed, it's higher pressure on the tyres. That is where you will more likely get the C1, C2 and C3 because they are the hardest compound of tyre. Have I got that right?
Bang on.
Sometimes I get the two mixed up. I think I want to say that the C5 is the hardest. It's not. The C1 is the hardest. Good to know, fact fans. Different weather conditions, Jolien, something we see a lot of here at Silverstone. It's glorious this weekend, but we've not always had that, trust me. How can the different weather conditions have an impact when it's a high-speed track versus on a low-speed track?
Very different again, really. Yeah. So obviously, naturally, when it rains, all the speeds are lower. So if you're running less downforce because you're in a Monza and it's high maximum speeds, somewhere like Mexico, you're trimmed out, well, you're actually... it's the curveball of altitude, but you've effectively got no downforce on the car. When it rains, it's really, really tricky because you've got even more of a floating feeling when you don't have the wings working perfectly. And so your grip level's low, you slide around more. It's actually what Max Verstappen in the Grand Prix at Silverstone last year was running lower downforce at Silverstone. When it rained, he was on pole position, but struggled a lot in the race because you need downforce on the car to help slow the car down. Navigate corners, especially the faster corners. Again, you've got the faster you go, the more aerodynamics becomes a bigger factor, more downforce you need. So yeah, in the wet, you need downforce on the car. It's the biggest thing.
Looking from the outside in, I would guess that it is a real challenge having to carry the speed you would want to carry to stay competitive through a high speed track, through high-speed corners when the grip has been reduced by the rain. That strikes me as a massive challenge on the high-speed corners in particular.
Yeah, it can be really tricky because also you need to make sure that when it rains, sometimes the tyres can fall out the window. If it's really wet and you're on a sort of one of the cooler Silverstone days, you might actually need to keep the tyres fired up. So you have to commit. you have to commit because the tyres will keep working and you've got downforce working at high speed. So, yeah, definitely that. The people always say that sort of rain is the great equaliser. In some ways it is, because driver skill has a much bigger impact than the performance of the cars, but still the cars with the most downforce will thrive when it's wet. The one thing is when it's wet, everything becomes a little bit less power sensitive because your traction zones are so much longer. Getting to full throttle takes a lot longer. So if you've got a really weak power unit, if you're Honda right now, a wet day might be quite good. If your strength is the power unit, you don't want it to be wet. The biggest thing, if it's wet, and the wetter it is even more important, is downforce.
Mm. Just finally, Jolyon Palmer, picture the scene. I'm giving you a Jenson Button opportunity, style opportunity.
Being the first to press the DRS.
No, here we not go. That. Even better, to come back. Jenson retired in 2016. He came back for one race only in 2017 to fill in for Fernando Alonso. Now, he came back at the Monaco Grand Prix. I'm saying to you, Jolyon, you can fill in for one of these guys for one race, right? Just one. But you got to pick a high-speed track or a low-speed track to have your race weekend. What are you picking?
Right. I'll be honest with you here.
Mm.
My natural gut would be Silverstone because home race, but also it's an amazing track and I love the thrill of high speed. My caveat here is I don't think I've got the neck strength right now to jump in and do Silverstone right now. So I'd have to spend far too long in the gym to get ready for this one.
You don't need to bother with that.
So in that instance, give me Monaco and I'll see how long I can keep it out the barriers.
Like Jensen did, but Jensen crashed at the end of the race,
unfortunately. Yeah, well, he didn't achieve the whole thing. Exactly. So but promises I would do the same.
But imagine fitness isn't a thing. It sounds like you're going high speed.
Love
as well
it.
Like
it's the thrill of racing. The Monaco's great because the barriers are close, so it feels quicker than it is. But Silverstone, hairing it through Copse, Maggots, Beckett, Stowe, all of that, all of the G-force on your body is exhilarating.
We genuinely get questions on F1 Explains from all over the world, and they are so wide and varied. But we do like wheeling you out, Jolyon Palmer, for the really technical driving stuff like this, because you're very good at explaining it. And we know our listeners like the detail. So thank you for helping us delve into the detail here and the nitty-gritty of driving these cars high speed versus driving them low speed. It's been very enjoyable.
Good. I'm glad I could help. It's been a lot of fun.
You can always help.
Back to Alex Jakes now.
In a few weeks. Thanks, Jolyon.
Cheers.
Thank you to Jolyon Palmer. Thank you to Rebecca from Sydney for her questions. Some classic F1 explaining there. Very much enjoyed that. And by the way, producer Jamie was right. Kimi Antonelli was the last person to use DRS. There you go. Jensen was the first. Kimi was the last. Perfectly, I suppose, characterising that era of aero with those cars. Coming in the Jensen era, coming out in the Kimi era, now that Jensen usually spends his time in the paddock on the television explaining the sport like Mr. Palmer does there. Excellent stuff. Keep those questions coming, please. F1 explains at F1.com. We very much enjoy them. But of course, this isn't the only official Formula One podcast. And we've gone very Monza on you on all three official pods this weekend. Over on the Beyond the Grid feed, we're speaking to, well, I suppose, Mr. Ferrari in many ways nowadays, isn't he? Charles Leclerc, speaking to Tom Clarkson about his career in F1 so far. Make sure you check that out. And F1 Nation is on this very feed with a little bit of a Monza preview with TC and the gang. And of course, they will be here straight after the race as well to debrief the Italian Grand Prix. Here on F1 Explains, we've got new episodes every Friday. It really does help if you could give us a positive rating, a like, a favourite, even tell your Formula One fan friends that we are here, because we are here with new episodes every Friday. So until then, we're back next week. Bye for now.